How's it going, guys? Manny Vietes back again with the Vietes Rundown. And on this episode, I'm bringing in my one of my best friends and my colleague for years now, Leo Biez. He is the managing editor at Cowbell Kingdom, the company that we both write for, we work for. Leo owns and manages it. How you doing, Leo?
I'm happy that you finally brought me on to the to your show, brother. It's been a while. I felt disrespect. Nah, I'm just joking.
Leo, I feel like we talk every single day, so it's not really, you know, I don't really need to bring you on to every single episode. That's because true. I hear enough of you through text messages and stuff. That's like true. That it's asking me to write stories and make YouTube videos, so you know,
I was listening to your show today actually at the gym, and I disagree with so many points that you made and that your buddies made. I was like, what the hell? Okay. Like, what are they talking about?
Yeah, Leo always has these crazy one-sided stories, and me and him always argue about them.
We're the one-sided stories. You talk about how Carmelo like won't work because he's a ball hog, but then he would work somewhere else with Houston. So you pretty much contradicted yourself like 1,000 times right there.
I mean, hey, we're just opening up for debate. I don't think. We can talk about that a little bit later, but let's get into something more serious going on right now here in Las Vegas. We had a tragic incident happen here on a Sunday night. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure all you guys have heard what's been going on. Mass murder took out 58 people at the Route 91 festival here in Las Vegas. And, you know, I didn't know really what to make of it at first. I was at home. I literally just got home. I think I was writing a story or something for one of my classes. And then my girlfriend called me and she said, "Hey, you know, there's a shooting going on the strip right now." And I was like, wait, hold on a second. Like we always hear that almost all the time. Like there was one a year ago, a year and a half ago. And then, you know, and thank God the police are always on top of it. So I really wasn't scared at first, you know? She was like, "No, it's bad. You need to go on to the police scanner right now and check this out and see what's going on." And it was only 10 minutes after the gunshots started going off because one of her friends tweeted about it or something, so she knew. I go in the police scanner and it was total chaos. I was sitting here at home shaking, and my mom was at the strip at that moment. She was at work at the New York. And I'm sitting there just, I'm in my room just shaking. My hands are shaking. My first reaction is obviously to call my mom and make sure she's all right. I call my mom. She's okay. She's hysterically crying and screaming on the phone. I tell her, "You need to go hide in a room. You need to go grab everybody that you're working with. Block all the doors. Turn off all the lights." Like, I honestly didn't know what was going on at that point. And then I'm on the police scanner, and I hear police officers saying, you know, we're taking, you know, five casualties, you know, five, we have this one police officer said they had five shot injured people in their cruiser, taking them to the hospital at the moment, bleeding out. And the guy sounded like hysteric. Like, I've never heard someone sound that frightened in their life. And this police officer was taking him to the hospital. Then immediately after, like, it kind of came like 30 seconds after, you just heard, you know, shots fired at this hotel. There's a shots fired at this hotel. And at that time, you didn't really know what was going on. Like, they said there was shots fired at the New York front lobby. They said there were shots fired at the Tropicana, that there was a gunman on top of the Tropicana. I was listening for about 30, 45 minutes on the scanner until the police actually went into that room and, where Stephen Paddock ended up shooting himself in the head and committing suicide. And I heard, I was just listening to all of it, and I was calling my mom in between, making sure she was all right. That was probably one of the more scariest things that probably could have happened. I know my mom is traumatized over it, even though the shooter was not in her hotel. Mm-hmm. The fact that on the police scanner, they were saying there were shots fired in New York, and there was people hysterically screaming throughout the hotel where she was at. It just made everything that much worse. I couldn't even imagine how people are feeling that have families that that were shot and killed at that festival. Exactly. I couldn't even relate to that. I've seen videos and all that type of stuff, and it just makes me sick to my stomach how someone could do that. Just a senseless thing. Leo, you know, you're in Sacramento right now. You kind of saw it from afar a little bit. What's your take on it? Just seeing it from a distance. I know you're at the Kings game the other night, and they did a little tribute beforehand. So I just want to talk about that a little bit.
Well, my first reaction when I first heard about it was, holy smokes, I need to text Manny. That was the first thing that popped in my head. And then that was about 5:30 a.m. when I woke up. And, you know, you, me, and E-Man are in a group chat, and you didn't respond. I went back to sleep, woke up at 8, you didn't respond, and then obviously I was up, and I was about to call you, and that's literally when you texted us, I'm okay, and I felt such a relief, for you, of course, but for the other people that suffered all these losses, all these inhumane losses. I mean, who can do something like that? It's just sickening. And this can happen anywhere. It can happen here. It happened there. You know, I think about this past summer, you know, we spent about 10 days together, right? And that shit could have happened at the NBA Summer League. It's sickening. And, you know, I kind of cried a little bit. I was like, damn, like this, it just comes to show that life's not guaranteed every day. And I always tell you that, like, you know, the first thing I do when I wake up is I thank God that I'm alive. And for those families that lost their kids, you know, like your mom is always worried when you're out, or my mom is worried when I'm out, and we may not return because there's a freaking psycho out there waiting to, you know, do what that guy did and injure over 500 people and kill about 60. So it's just sickening, man. And you know, you have all these Republicans, all these Democrats, some are extreme on both sides. And at the end of the day, even if you take away guns or not, we have these psychopaths on Earth waiting to commit another act of evil. And regardless of what happens, it's going to happen, man. And it sucks to say that, but
oh, yeah,
it's praying for the best.
This is the first time ever since I've been a journalist. I've been doing this for 4 years now, or 5 years now, you know, in maybe 3 or 4 years doing it actually intensively, covering games and stuff. But this is my first time in my career that I've actually questioned my career path and what I want to do, and what I've been majoring in and what I've been actually pursuing. Because not that I'm going to get into politics by any means, like as far as my journalistic career goes, but the fact that less than 24 hours after all of this went down, this is like immediately, maybe 10 hours after, there was people on both sides, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, just pushing their own agendas about gun control. This guy was a Trump supporter. This guy was a liberal, and that way, then he shot up the country music festival because they're all Republicans who are country music fans. All of this type of stuff that was just psychotic. Like, how are you able to, like, none of these people that were all talking on Twitter and, you know, talking, and then now all these people that are on TV talking about it, they're here in Vegas stationed, setting up their cameras, looking right at the Mandalay Bay windows now, all doing their talk shows here, which is, you know, that always happens. But the fact that they're pushing these agendas right away made me question everything that I stand for as a journalist, you know, and I don't lean one way or the other way. I see everything very, very clearly. I'm a very, 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 I'm super straight edge. I'm definitely an independent. I see both sides. It just seeing that stuff made me literally sick. Like that we have no one out there that's really like reporting just unbiasedly. That everyone's out there just pushing their agendas. If you're and I don't understand. If you're, you know, if you want to talk about gun control, so be it. Don't do it right now. Mm-hmm. Right now is not the time. There's a time for grief. There's a time for, you know, reportage. And then there's a time for then you find out what's going on. You know, you got to get a grasp of what's going on, collect all the information and evidence that's possible to grasp the situation. And then after that, you can make your arguments and your debates about what happened, gun control, this and that. It was too soon for any of this to possibly happen, or like for any of these people to be talking about it. It made me sick to my stomach because I'm here in the ground in Vegas and I saw how everybody responded on that Monday morning. As soon as I got done with classes on that Monday morning, I headed to the convention center. And I headed to UMC. I grabbed water, I grabbed food, I grabbed all that type of stuff. Because in that moment, you just don't know what everybody needs. You know they need blood. You see the pictures and the videos of people bleeding out, you know. And so I was like, you know, I need to go to UMC right away. So I went to UMC. Me and my buddy went there. We grabbed food, water, basically just anything we could do to help out. And we got there and there was a whole bunch of people there. Surprisingly, I didn't think there was going to be that many people there. There was so many supplies and stuff available. And then I was just thinking, I'm like, well, why are all these supplies here? You know, we need to be helping these people out directly. So I ended up figuring out that they were taking everybody to the convention center who was affected and who was there, and they have some people who are injured, or they're taking people there who they can't find their families or don't know where their loved ones are. And so I ended up, you know, just getting a caravan of like 20 different people. They had like probably 10 or 15.
I apologize for that, bro. That was great to watch.
Bro, I had like 10 or 15 different people like in cars, and we were like all that stuff would have probably sat at the UMC. But like, I mean, I'm not saying I saved the day by any means or did anything like that. But like in that moment, I just didn't know what to do. Like everyone kept donating. Like I saw like there was like probably 400 or 500 cases of water. But like, and you know, you can't donate water for what happened, like, you know. Yeah. But everyone just tries to giving things because you just don't know what to do or what to give. And we literally piled up all these trucks from the UMC and we took them all to the convention center, and we were one of the first cars there at the convention center. And there was probably only about 100 people there at the time. They set up tables for all the families that were just arriving. They set up a TV for kids to watch SpongeBob, stuff like that. And then after that, there was literally thousands of cars that started coming, bringing stuff. And I kid you not, Leo, there was literally probably like 1,000 cases of water. There was about like 700 pizza boxes. There was like all these different types of food companies were coming in, Chipotle, Cane's, Chick-fil-A, bringing all the food that you could possibly imagine. And it was something crazy to see. I didn't think that there was going to be people here in Vegas doing that type of stuff. And you know, I had that instinct that I needed to help. And I was shocked that there was that many people that were out there helping. And I'm very, very fortunate that I live in a city that if something else were to happen, or you know, if anything else crazy like what happened on Sunday night, I know that I have these people in my city that could back me up with that. I saw people that I haven't seen in years there helping out. I saw people there that were in my fraternity, people that I played basketball with at the gym. No one, the cool thing about that day when I was there, you know, in midst of all the tragedy and all the bloodshed and everything that happened, after everything that was going on in the news for the last 2 weeks before that, it seemed like it was all over. It felt like it was all over for just that one moment in time where everyone's worried and trying to help. I'm just thinking how would our society be if that was the way it was 24/7? Amazing. Everybody was out there helping each other out 24/7. I was hopping in random people's trucks, grabbing out cases of water, throwing them to police officers. Even Dan Blazarian was there. I was handing them to white people, black people, Asian people, women of all ages, guys of all ages. It didn't matter. No one had a vest on. No one was out there controlling the situation or telling people they should go here and do this and do that. It was everybody was just coming together. No one was controlling anybody. No one was trying to act like they were in charge. Everybody was just trying to do the right thing. And it just sucks that it takes something like a mass murderer to cause people to come together like that.
I agree.
And you know, man, I don't want to talk about this for too long, but I just felt like I needed to definitely talk about this. Even though we talk about sports all the time, this is something that crosses over into everybody's lives. And I couldn't go one more. I had to tell everybody what happened and tell you guys how it is on the ground here in Vegas, because, you know, it was honestly remarkable. And if I had some words for everybody out there, I would definitely say be skeptical of what you read in the news. Choose your news wisely. You know, just make sure, like, if you read an article, just don't read the headline. Don't just scroll through your Twitter and read what the headline says. Click the story, read the story, fact check the story, look at the sources, all that type of stuff. If you want to find out the truth, you got to find out in the best way possible as you think, you know, and you can't just let these people guide you in directing, you know, their own agendas and the way that they think to control your opinion. Leo, do you have anything else?
Monday night at the Kings game, it was the first preseason game against San Antonio. We had a small tribute right before the national anthem, and that was a sad moment. Honestly, I was on the floor, and everyone was just quiet, and then the lights came back on. But obviously, super sad moment. And then after the game, when I was editing interviews and stories, or my interviews and my show, I saw the tweet that a teacher had tweeted out to a girl, and I think it said, you need a note because you missed class or something like that. And I was like, wait, we just had one of the biggest massacres in U.S. history, and you're asking for a freaking note? Come on, man. It's one of those small moments.
Let me just talk about that for 1 second, okay? For all my UNLV listeners out there and everyone that lives here in Las Vegas, and even if they just know me, I'm going to be that type of person that's going to fight for you if you don't have a voice, because I'm just that type of person. Because there's some people out there that can't even speak up for themselves, and they just don't know how to. And trust me, as soon as I saw this teacher email this girl back on Monday morning and said, If you want to be excused from your tests on Monday morning, you need to bring in a doctor's note.
Yeah, that one.
That hurt my heart. That hurt my heart to be attending a university where a teacher is going to say that to a student, and we're students that are out there paying their salaries. That was one of the most unsettling, sick, like gut-wrenching things I've ever heard in my life. Like, on top of UNLV not canceling class on that Monday, they had their teachers doing the same thing and just responding in such a terrible way. I just don't understand that. I just don't. You know, at this time, still on Monday morning, you don't know if a teacher has been shot. You know, you don't, like, being the teacher, you don't even know if any of your colleagues have been shot. If the teacher you share a classroom with right next to you has been shot, or a student that's in one of your classes has been shot or murdered, you don't know. How can you still have class? I can walk from my class to the Mandalay Bay or to where the Route 91 festival, where the festival was, in less than 10 minutes. I mean, I could jog a little bit. I get there in time, but my point is, I parked on campus on Monday morning. I look to the left. I see the Mandalay Bay windows knocked out. You know, I'm pulling in. There's EMT. There's cars in front of the Thomas and Mack where they used that as a refuge center the night before, just hours before, just 3 or 4 hours before. And there was people still there. There's people that were at the festival that had came over there in cars that were huddled around each other having blankets while students are in the midst of walking to class because the university didn't let them know anything. Or I don't understand that. You know, I don't understand that. All right. I just need to stop talking about this right now, because then it'll turn into a political podcast or whatever you guys think it will turn into. But we came here to talk about basketball. That's what we do. You know, rest in peace to everybody that lost their lives there on Sunday night. Vegas is with you. The rest of the world is with you. Sacramento is with you as well. All right, Leo. So let's get into Kings basketball for once. Let's talk about the Kings. You saw De'Aaron Fox the other night. Looked pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Is the hype real? Is the hype real? That's what I'm asking you.
The hype is real, and I'm not the type of guy that will say after one preseason game, after a meaningless preseason game without Kawhi Leonard, without Rudy Gay, but I'll say this. He is as fast as advertised. We saw that in Summer League. We saw it in spurts, right? And we finally saw it against NBA competition, regardless of it being second stringers or third stringers. These guys are, you know, they're still really good basketball players. And the mere fact that he missed one shot, he had the perfect game. After the game, we asked him about that. He was like, We're gonna have film tomorrow, and I think they'll come up with something. I think it's a shot that I missed, but other than that, I think my game went pretty well, and everyone laughed. Like, but he had the perfect game and the perfect debut, right? So, yeah, I do think that he is the real deal, and if he knocks that shot down consistently, he's gonna win Rookie of the Year hands down.
Yeah, I mean,
but that's a big if, though. If he continues to knock that.
Yeah,
that mid-range and that three-point shot.
What, I mean, that's what we were talking about even before the Kings even drafted him. We were that's all we were saying. We were like, he could be the better John Wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
He could learn how to shoot. But you know what's going to be crazier to see is that if he can actually be that point guard that we've been needing for years, like you know, like
not just
if
any point guard, man, a two-way defensive hound point guard that can just go downhill and pesk the shit out of your opposing point guard. Like, this guy was pesking Patty Mills and whoever else brought up the ball. Like, dude, it was amazing to watch. Like, that type of effort, man, it should be applied at every single night.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely not used to that.
No.
I mean, we had Darren Collison.
Oh, we're not.
I mean, we had Darren Collison and Tyreek Hill when we started out. And I mean, Rondo, like, I don't know, like you had problems there too. But, you know, bringing in
the last real point guard was Mike Bibby.
Exactly. I know. But
it's just Mike was just a one-way player.
Yep. And it's just, I don't know. It's kind of shocking. Like, I just don't know how we're going to, like you can attest for this too. Every single game recap, every single story that we did for the last 4 years about Kings basketball, it's been the same thing. It kind of felt like you were just copying and pasting stories night in and night out, because it would just be like, you know, DeMarcus Cousins scores 26 points tonight. He gets one technical foul and the Kings lose by 20 points. Like every single game.
Or they lose by three or less.
And last season, they were getting better at that. Like they stayed in almost every single game, and that was good to see. Even though we lost, you know, probably one of our biggest pieces, but we stayed in every single game. And especially after that trade, that young Kings unit that we saw out there for the last bit of the season, that was pretty awesome. And I just don't know if that's going to translate well at the beginning of the season. We're definitely in like the craziest conference of all time in basketball right now.
I know. Well, that's the thing about the Kings and De'Aaron Fox and how he fell to the Kings. If DeMarcus Cousins survives his tenure, the Kings don't have De'Aaron Fox, because the Kings would have fell off the playoffs for like a game and they would have finished 11th, 12th, or even 13th, right? And the mere fact that he got traded, you know, told
allowed them to lose games a little bit.
So they started to lose games and, you know,
because we were going to, because we were going to draft around probably probably 8, probably 7 or so like that. We were probably going to be.
No, I think the Kings would have fell short of Portland. Like literally
they would have been like 10,
12, 12, 13 for sure.
Oh shit. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's just going to be different. It's going to be a crazy season to cover, watch.
It's amazing, man. It's like the atmosphere. It's so positive now, man. Everyone wants to talk. Everyone smiles. You don't feel the same negative vibes that you felt the last 7 years inside of Kings locker room, and it's an amazing feeling.
It's not only negative.
It's fun again. Like, doing this is fun again.
Exactly. No, yeah. There was that time for like the whole last year where it was just like, you know, it was a whole bunch of.
It was dreadful. Like I was tired of doing this.
I was tired of it too. You Leo would text me, hey man, I need you to write a story right now, man. You know, real quick. I'll be like, bro, I don't want to write this story right now about DeMarcus Cousins getting another technical foul, and like, you know, those days are over. Thank you, Jesus. We have a young roster now. We have things to look forward to. Just looking at from afar from media day, that looked.
One quick question: do you know if the Warriors T Wolves play right now at 11?
Yeah, they're playing in 18 minutes.
Yep. Wow! Yep. Wow! I can't wait.
Yeah, I know, it's just preseason basketball. Chill out.
Still though, I mean, I'm ecstatic for basketball.
Everyone is, man. Like, I got.
Hey, just a quick plug in. You guys can go ahead and watch the D Rose highlights that I posted and Ben Simmons' debut, really, for this season. So they're up on the YouTube channel. Go ahead and watch them, guys. I posted James Harden, Chris Paul, which that's going to be a dynamic team to watch all season long. We have those highlights. So, yeah, guys, we're covering the NBA on the YouTube channel, as you guys already know that, but just an FYI for you guys.
Yeah, just go follow us, please, on everything, Instagram, Twitter,
and YouTube. Thank you, guys. We finally reached 4,000 subscribers. We're, like, stuck at 3,800 forever, I felt like.
Yeah, ever since the Summer League, we were stuck around there. But, hey, but once the season starts, though, we're going to have content coming out like crazy because
every day
everyone's going to want to know what's going on with the Kings. And we definitely have the best video crew. We definitely have the best cameras out of everybody in Sacramento, without a doubt. We get our stuff out there faster than the Kings news. We get our stuff out there than ABC, local stations, Sacramento B, all that stuff. And the cool thing is that, you know, we're younger than all of them. We're at least, Leo's at least 7 years younger than the next oldest person. The next youngest person. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but we're unbiased. We want the Kings to win. We didn't really know how to cover them when we have a superstar that's at our necks, cussing out our reporter in the locker room and yelling at Leo during the sidelines. Like, now this is a new era for us. Like, people are gonna start, you know, taking this a lot more seriously, start taking the Kings more seriously. Leo, I wanted to ask you this. I haven't asked you this before. So you know how, like, super teams are assembling now. You know how everyone came to the Warriors. Oh, how Kevin Durant came to the Warriors because they were made organically. I think that when we think about it long term, you think about organic teams being assembled through the draft. I think that the Kings have the best shot to becoming the next Warriors in the next four to 5 years.
I've told fans a lot this. I said the likelihood of the Kings being the Warriors and drafting three, you know, superstars in reality with Klay, Draymond, and Steph. I said they're, as of right now, in my opinion, if I would have to bet on anyone, it'd be Scal and De'Aaron Fox. Other than that, I feel like next year's draft they can get a guy like Luka Doncic, Beagley, or even Porter Jr. I think that's going to be the third guy. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's Harry Giles if he stays healthy, or I hope it's Buddy or even Bogdan. But I just don't see it happening because the likelihood of all these guys becoming stars is very, very, very rare. But if I had to bet, I'd go with De'Aaron Fox and Scal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as right now.
Yeah, I mean, but like we just forget to see it as what it is. Like, Willie Cauley-Stein's still young. Like, he's young. He could be, I feel like he could be like a DeAndre Jordan if you get the right point guard in there. He can do everything DeAndre does. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, DeAndre can't do too much. And then Scal, he's gotten way better. Even Papa got better. Like, I mean, I'm not saying Papa's gonna be something. But, you know, we got Buddy, Malachi. We got all these young pieces. Like, we definitely have the youngest team in the NBA.
It's exciting.
I know. It's like all these guys are our age or younger.
Yeah.
Like, it's like we can relate.
They're younger.
I know. And that's why everyone should follow us too. Because you know why? Because we're the only ones that have that insight into their age and into knowing how they, you know, what music they listen to, what they think, you know, what like what's in their head being at such a young age. All these old people are covering, you know, all the semantics and, you know, all this.
Buddy Hield and I are the same age. Bogdanovich he just turned 25. So roughly he's a couple months older than me. So we're like the oldest guys in Willie. And then it's like from there on there, it's 22, 21, 19.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, well, then you got Zach Randolph and
You have the old guys that won't be here long. I mean, they're going to be here short term.
Yeah. I mean, that's good. We got those three guys. So, all right, now we kind of talked about him. Let's talk about Scal. What have you seen from your game?
I
remember you were high on him and he was super skinny a couple of years ago when he came out.
Definitely gained weight. He's not where he should be, but he's also just 20, 21 years old. He's not even close to his prime. The amount of skill and touch and just silkiness from his game, mm-hmm. his footwork is amazing. I was talking to the assistant GM and he was like, well, we don't have a stretch four. And we had a stretch four in Anthony Tolliver, and we're hoping that Scal becomes that. Dude, Scal comes out, starts shooting threes like it's a free throw. His jump shot is so silky. He is that guy, and I'm just so convinced. Like, if I had to bet on one guy, it'd be him to be that really, like, that superstar player that the Kings need right now. And he can shoot. He has an inside game and outside game. He's only going to get stronger, in my opinion. And the best part about him, Manny, is he's an amazing human being. He's just so – he doesn't take life for granted. He almost passed away in that 2010 earthquake in Haiti. Yeah. He went back this past summer to host the first ever basketball camp in Haiti. Just the guy is such a human person, and he loves people. He's just such an amazing guy. Like, if you talk to him, he's going to talk to you and just have a conversation with you. Like, dude, he's a real down-to-earth human being, and I can't wait to see him succeed, man.
And that's something that we like, having someone that we can actually talk to in person and have a hold of conversation with, unlike DeMarcus. yeah, so where are we looking at the shooting guard position now? You know, where
it's hard, dude.
We have a lot of competition right there. Like, the shooting guard, I mean, all of our guys that are at the two, they can either play the two or the three easy. Because that shooting guard position has kind of morphed into like that shooting small forward. It's all kind of the same now. All the guys are about 6'6". They all can shoot. They all can dribble. They all can go to the
basket. Only difference is, I would say, is if you're a small forward, you still have to crash the boards. And a lot of these shooting guards don't like to do that. And that's where the big disconnect is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, I mean, there's a lot of shooters on different teams now that don't do that already. But, all right, so we got Malachi. We have Buddy Hield. We have
Bogdan
now.
You have Garrett Temple.
We have Temple. We have Vince Carter. We have George Hill that's going to share some minutes at the two as well, with De'Aaron coming in.
Justin Jackson, Frank Mason.
We have a team loaded of guards, and we also have a lot of bigs too. But our guard situation is huge. We have guys that can run.
The Kings don't have a natural small forward that they can just plug in.
No, well, yeah, they don't. I mean,
well, it's Justin Jackson.
Our small forward is not really ready. Yeah, our small forward is Justin Jackson. It's going to be Justin Jackson and Vince Carter. But they're going to be playing Bogdan at the two and the three as well. They're going to be running those lineups in there with those three guys in there. I mean, they're going to have Bogdan at the two and then Buddy coming in at the – I mean Bogdan at the three, Buddy coming in at the two, or vice versa. I mean, they're just going to have to find their lineup as soon as the season starts. It's going to be something to watch, because you're not going to know how these guys are going to respond to each other come like a regular season NBA game. Some, like, for instance, Bogdan hasn't even played an NBA game. Like, you know, he played a preseason game, but, you know, those guys, there's a lot of learning to do. There's a lot of different types of people from different walks of life on that team. It's very, you know, it's a foreign team to some of the people. You know, in even just in like the communication, you know, there's, you know, like Buddy can't, you know what I mean? Like, it's just hard to learn different teammates. Especially coming in so soon, and it's just, you know, like, you basically, the whole roster is new, everyone on the roster is new. There's no expectations this season at all. I mean, maybe there would be one to see if Scal and Buddy and all these guys can actually.
No, I think Willie's really big year, Manny. He has to perform, in my opinion. If he doesn't, bye bye.
Yeah, I mean, but there's not that. I mean, we can't really get rid of him because there's no one else really out.
Yeah, there's no expectation as far as wins, but as far as like individual
skill,
like, that's his. This year, it's his year. No more excuses. There's no DeMarcus Cousins. There's nobody that can. As honestly, that's better than him, right, on paper at least. So I expect him to have a good year. And if he doesn't, it's time for change, man.
Well, I feel like we need to just evaluate everyone's performance. I mean, yeah, obviously if he doesn't do well, but again, that's the first year without DeMarcus there. And it would only be his first year actually playing real minutes. Last year he only played, you know, subsidized minutes. And then when DeMarcus left, he played full time. But, you know, it's just going to be a season just to see the growth and to see if there actually is a future. Because, like, I remember when you saw the Warriors got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond, there was, like, spark. you know, there was that spark, even though I remember like when Steph Curry first came to the Warriors, he had that game Madison Square Garden. Maybe he was in the league for like 2-3 years already. And then he dropped 55 points on Melo in the Garden. And I'm just like, dang, this guy's going to be raw. You know, even though he spent a couple more years at Davidson, it's still, you know, you can just see the talent from a distance. You didn't know Steph Curry was going to be Steph Curry from that point, yeah. You know, but you know, that's the only way you can gauge, you know, the success. Cause I remember at that time, the Warriors were barely cracking 500, not even making the playoffs. And then out of nowhere, they just sparked up. And if we can get that from these young guys, if we can be floating around like 9 or 10, or like, I mean, that's probably not going to happen, but maybe like even like 11, if we're not dead last, if we're better than like the Lakers and the Suns, you know, I'd be fine with it. You know, I'd be fine with that season, especially if we saw growth and we saw like De'Aaron Fox actually becoming De'Aaron Fox that everyone wanted to see, and all these picks panning out and all these weird decisions that Vlade was making on these multiple different draft nights, getting Bogdan and, you know, getting, you know, Papa Giannis with the 13th pick a couple of years back. It's just going to be great to see, because like there's no more. You're right, Leo. There's no more excuses anymore. There's no more. No. There's no more excuses for saying, oh, well, you know, like we're seeing if this guy's going to pan out. You know, like he's getting playing time this year because we need them to play. You know, just talk about like the atmosphere now. Like I know we talked about it a little bit.
This is so positive from the start. So Monday, Dave went with his old vets, right? He went with George Hill, Garrett Temple, Vince Carter, Zebo, and Kosta Kufis. And then the second unit was literally all the young guys. He brought in De'Aaron Fox, Bogey, Buddy Hield, Scow, and Willie. And as soon as the young kids came, they ran, and they ran really fast, and it was just fun to watch. Again, this year is about watching these kids develop. It's going to be a fun year. The Kings are going to lose a lot of games, but they're going to be competitive. And you can't always say that about a lot of teams, but I truly believe that they're going to be in almost every single game and lose at the end. And if that happens, that's a good year for me.
Yeah, and it's better than years in the past for sure. It's just gonna be crazy just to be able to talk and write about different types of players rather than what we had in the past. Covering the thing that, you know, that gets me, it's like if we were covering like the Warriors for the last 4 years, this would probably be the greatest 4 years of our lives. You know, yeah. Even though it's been fun doing all this, but. You know, if we're covering the Warriors for 4 years now, like look at them, like we would have probably been, you know, like on cloud nine. Exactly. Yeah. You know, but you know, because all of our content's good.
Yeah.
And that's just one, you know, and that's just another thing. Like I want to kind of pick up some Kings fans during this podcast. Like if you guys don't have an NBA team, you know, to follow, or if you guys are just getting into basketball,
and that comes with winning, you know, like when you start winning. Exactly. Other people start following you and just like, oh,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's where the bandwagoning comes along. Like all these Warriors fans weren't.
Just look at the Raiders. Exactly. I see so many big Raider fans. I'm like, wait, what?
Now everybody in Vegas is a Raider fan and yada, yada, yada. But no, guys, seriously, if you guys are looking for a team to start watching and start covering and paying attention to, setting notifications on your phone, looking at their scores, stuff like that, and you guys want to actually get involved, I would feel like the Kings are the right fit for you guys. Like
they're fun.
They're fun. They're a young team. They're on the West Coast. They're in a city that's up and coming. You know, they have a city that stands behind their team. The arena is dope.
Best arena in the world. Hands down, better than Vegas's.
Oh yeah, no, without a doubt, the Golden One's probably better than the T-Mobile and Thomas and Mack. But no, seriously, guys, follow us. Make sure you guys follow our Twitter, our Instagram, our YouTube. All season long, we're going to be posting game recaps, stories, interviews, high definition interviews, If you guys haven't seen him so far, you guys are missing out. They're pretty crazy. That camera that Leo has.
Really, man. Yeah, you know, we posted an interview with Pau Gasol. We'll be in the opposing locker rooms as well. So if you guys don't like the Kings, you can still watch the opposing locker room sound bites and in high definition. Like Manny said earlier, we have great cameras, multiple cameras that we can use with good microphones. And always going to get the best type of sound bites from us.
Exactly. Like in coming from like an unbiased media source, you know, we're to be honest with you, everybody out there, we're the only people doing this.
Yeah.
Out of anyone in the NBA, we're the only exclusive media covering service that covers any NBA team on their own, you know, and everyone picks our stuff up because it's honestly better than everyone else's stuff out there. Exactly. Follow. All right. So I'm going to give Leo a little plug here. Follow Leo on Twitter at Leo_BS, right?
No, it's at BS Leo.
Oh, okay. My bad. That was something else. But at BS Leo, BEASLEO. And then you can also follow myself if you guys haven't followed me already. You guys can follow me at Manny_Vietes on Twitter and on Instagram as well. Leo,
let me ask you this. Going on your last podcast, give me your top five teams in the West.
Okay. I actually need a clarification on this because I messed up a little bit on that.
Okay.
All right. So I'll go with the Warriors being number one.
Okay.
Without a doubt. I would say the Timberwolves number two.
That's biased, but okay.
It is a little bit biased because
don't get me wrong. I love the T-Wolves, but go ahead.
Okay. T-Wolves, it's either going to be third, I would say probably like the Thunder or the Spurs.
Okay.
And then fourth, probably, you know, either the Thunder, Spurs.
So you're going Thunder, three, Spurs, four.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going Warriors, Timberwolves, Thunder, Spurs, Rockets.
That's fair.
And then after that, we can kind of see where the chips fall. I just think this is a year where the Spurs are going to fall off a little bit, just a little bit. The talent's still there, the coaching is still there, but they've never seen Popovich has never seen like a wave in the NBA like this. It's kind of like overpowering. Like, yeah, you can be like, I'm just assuming things, but you can just like, you can be the best coach in the NBA and have the best defensive scheme, best game plans, best out of the timeout situations. But when it comes down to it though, like you can have all that in your bag, but if you have three guys on the other team that can give you 20 points a game and against you, you can't really game plan against that. Like you can rarely game plan against the Warriors, even though the Spurs play the Warriors tight. You can't really game plan against them. You can't really game plan against, I'm pretty sure the Spurs are going to, Thunder are going to be out of control. Timberwolves are going to be out of control as well. Like it might be too much for the Spurs to get that, to get that second seed again, or even the third seed, to be honest with you. I see the Rockets taking a step back. I think adding Chris Paul takes away from James Harden's touches and he's not going to be,
But go ahead, finish.
I feel like he's not going to be able to be getting to be giving to be getting those triple doubles like how he was last year. He had the ball in his hands more than anybody in the NBA, and then Chris Paul's not going to have that. He didn't go to Houston to just stand around and shoot threes like everybody else in that team. So James Harden's going to be having to share the ball a little bit, and it's going to be a little bit different system. I feel like a lot of the players on the Rockets are going to get better this year because of Chris Paul. Like Clint Capella, he could probably turn into DeAndre Jordan. That's just my take on that. And then as far as the Timberwolves being the second seed, that's a controversy for almost everybody because they don't believe me. But, you know, when you look at it, it's like those guys are raw, man. Like Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns, those guys had a streak during the regular season where they scored 20 points each a game. I think it was like 20-something games in a row.
Offensively, but they were also the worst defenders in the entire NBA, which is concerning because they have a defensive genius coach.
Look, so and that's why you
see, we have to wait and see if the defense from the place. And if that happens, you're right. They're scary.
Yeah, but then they also didn't have a point guard. Like, you know what I mean? Ricky Rubio is good, but he's not proven. He's not a playoff point guard. He's not a high pressure, you know, like in clutch moments point guard. They bring in Jeff Teague, who he's a defensive sound. He's a well coached player. You know, he played
in Rubio is better defensively than Jeff Teague is, but That's just my take.
You said Ricky Rubio is?
Yeah, Ricky's considered one of the best defenders at his position.
I mean, yeah, but when it comes down to it, like if I want an all-around player who can, you know, be able to, you know, like Jeff Teague can average 17 points a game or 15 points a game.
Definitely a better shooter, but when it comes to shooter, running an offense, Ricky's much better running an offense.
I don't know, man. Well, I mean, Jeff Teague's a better point guard, like a better proven point guard than Ricky Rubio. Well, that's without a doubt.
On success, and to be fair, Ricky hasn't had that type of nucleus around him.
Okay, and then you bring in Jimmy Butler, who is a defensive-minded shooting guard. He's probably one of the better defensive players we have in the NBA.
He's amazing.
Exactly. And you bring him to Tom Thibodeau, which he was that nucleus of that defensive core in Chicago. And then they also bring in Taj Gibson to come off the bench or even start. And you have Gorgui Dieng and you have Jamal Crawford coming off the bench that will give you 15 to 20 points a game.
Would you have not preferred Paul Millsap and Kyle Lowry instead of Jeff Teague and who else?
Taj Gibson?
Jeff Teague and the other Bulls guy?
Who? You're talking about Jimmy Butler?
No, the other guy, Gibson.
Oh, I don't know. Like,
Paul Millsap would have been amazing, and the Kyle Lowry at the point would have been scary. I think they would have been the Warriors if that would have happened.
Kyle Lowry, Paul Millsap. And you'd have Karl Anthony Towns and
Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, but I don't think they would have got.
Those are all All-Stars.
I know, but there was no way they were gonna be able to do that and get Jimmy Butler as well. They couldn't handle that.
No, they actually had the money, but then they would have no bench.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather have Jeff Teague, Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler, and Jamal Crawford coming off the bench. You know. That's a way better unit to me because you got that bench scoring and you got that relationship between Thibodeau and Taj Gibson. So I don't want to talk about the Timberwolves that much, but I'm really high on them. I think that they're going to be something this year to possibly beat the Warriors. Maybe I'm not going to say that yet, but they're actually playing right now. I'm probably going to go watch the game right after this podcast. Are you going to watch the game, Leo?
Absolutely. I'm ecstatic for it. So I'm going to go the obvious. The Warriors, number one. The Rockets, number two. The Spurs, number three. OKC, number four. And the T-Wolves, number five. And number six.
It's almost a flip-flop.
With who?
with me.
Well, yeah. I think we all know the top five teams on paper, right? I mean, yeah. As of right now, on paper, those are the five top teams in the West. And then you have so many other teams that are really good. And it's unfortunate because someone's going to get screwed until the NBA goes to a 1-16, which is something that we should advocate for on every single avenue because it's going to be unfair. You're going to have the Clippers, who are really damn good this year with their Serbian point guard. They're not going to miss that much for Chris Paul. This guy is the most gifted passer on earth, period. Milos is just insane. Like, his vision is just second to none, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have, I think, the best defensive point guard in the game in Patrick Beverley. You still have Blake. You still have DJ. You have Gallo over there. They're a very deep team. They're going to play really fast this year, so it's going to be fun to watch them. Then you have Denver, who picked up Paul Millsap. And they're going to put him next to Jokic, who's one of the up-and-coming centers in the NBA.
And then you also have the Pelicans, and you also have the Jazz.
The Jazz, who I think are very underrated. So, yeah.
I think the Jazz are going to be nice, too. The Jazz might
even... I really do.
Yeah, Jazz might even hop over the Timberwolves. I mean, if you're going to do it in your way.
You have Memphis.
It's almost see, like, guys, it's going to be – I'm telling you right, it's impossible. Like, the Kings have a 0.00% chance of making the playoffs, a 0.
And it's unfair because two teams in the East with a below 500 score or record are going to get in. And to me, that's bull crap.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, it's – yeah, I mean – you're right, Leo. Like, I mean, we need to have changed this playoff system. We need
1-16.
1-16. But if it was 1-16, there would only be three teams in the East making it.
Who cares? The best team should be to get in, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, yeah, because the first two rounds of the Eastern Conference are kind of bull anyway. No one really watches it. It's either the Raptors sweeping somebody or the Cavs sweeping somebody. And then now
In the East, you have Boston, Cleveland, Washington, Milwaukee, and Toronto. Those are the top five teams. And I'll take that back. Barring injury, Philadelphia should be top six this year, honestly. They'll be fun to watch.
And then you got the Heat.
But that's a big if.
I mean, you still got the Heat and the Hornets.
They're going to be relevant to me. I think the Sixers are the team to watch for because they have a great young nucleus, but they're always injured. So,
hopefully, some people in the East stay healthy and actually stay there and not get traded or want to leave after the season because that would make the East even that much weaker.
LeBron goes to the Big Apple.
I'm not even going to talk about the LeBron conspiracy theories. But I mean, look at that fool's team. He has basically
two starting fives, pretty much.
Two starting fives, and that third string is still a starting five on like some teams. Like,
you have Jose Calderon, which is a very productive
point guard. I know, right? Like that makes you got Channing Frye, Jose Calderon on your third team. Like,
I think Thompson should be part of the third team because if I'm them, I play Jeff Green, Crowder, which I think they have a lot more.
You don't take Thompson and put Thompson on the third string. Like, come on, man. No, you use him as a six man. Love at five. Yeah, you start Love at five, Crowder at four, LeBron three, Dwayne Wade, and then Isaiah Thomas. But then you have Thompson coming off the bench at the sixth man, and then you have Derrick Rose being the backup point guard, and then you have J.R. Smith coming out and coming in for Dwayne Wade. And then you also have Iman Shumpert, which I think he got injured tonight.
You have Jeff Green.
Yeah, no, Jeff Green's going to get minutes too, surprisingly, even though he's old. Richard Jefferson's, I mean, kind of. Richard Jefferson's not going to get minutes, though.
Right. I forgot. There actually isn't another big besides Tristan Thompson off the bench, right?
No, there isn't. I mean, well, then they got Channing Frye.
He's the backup.
I mean, they got Channing Frye too, which they're gonna use those. I mean, no, they actually got Kendrick Perkins as well now.
No, I'd play Thompson over him.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of just got Kendrick Perkins just for like the defense,
veteran leadership. Yeah,
like the veteran leadership liability.
He got smacked down by John Collins, a rookie who I interviewed during the John Collins is a bunny. I mean, this guy has springs on his feet.
Really?
I had no idea he was athletic, but he must be top five in the league, dude. Like this guy just
springs. Yeah, I talked to him a little bit when I was in New York. That guy was like super, super chill, just laid back.
Super skinny. He runs like a damn deer at almost 7 feet tall, dude. He's gonna be really good.
And yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. You're in the East. You're not really gonna make it out anytime soon or get any spotlight.
Well, Atlanta has like five first round picks in the next like 3 years, dude. So
we'll see. See what happens. They have a good coach. So we'll see what can happen.
They have their GM came from Golden State this past year, so he obviously knows a little bit something about winning.
I know, right? I mean, it's just gonna be hard for any team to make it out of the East or the West besides the Warriors and the Cavs. It's just gonna be a challenge.
Warriors, Cavs, barring injury again, but
yeah, again, and it could happen for the next 3 or 4 years if LeBron stays in Cleveland, and that will be seven straight finals in a row with the same teams. It's almost impossible to beat. All right, Leo, I think we're done. We think we covered a lot today. We talked about basically almost everything within the Kings.
Warriors 16-6, bro. That's crazy.
16-6. All right. I'm about to turn that game on and start watching it. All right, Leo, thanks for hopping on the Vietes rundown and joining me today. It's been a long time coming, but you finally hopped on.
Yes, sir. Happy to be here anytime, brother.
All right. All right, guys. And, again, I just want to, just give my heart and all my prayers to everyone.
Amen.
That was involved in that incident on Sunday night. And for all the families that were affected, everyone recovering from this horrific, horrific tragedy. This thing should never have happened. There's some sick-minded people out there that are willing to, even though God made this world as perfect as he possibly could, there are people out there that, you know, everyone has free will. You know, everyone's allowed to do, you know, whatever they please. And unfortunately, that's probably it's one of the worst things that could possibly happen. And it's sickening that there's people out there that use their ability of free will into doing these type of, you know, horrific events. Mm-hmm. Everyone needs to pray. Everyone needs Jesus. Everyone needs, you know, to confide in each other.
Yes, sir.
And unite, you know, be a human race. Don't be black. Don't signify yourself as being just, you know, just a black person, or just being a white person, or just being an Asian person, or, you know, just being a liberal, or just being a conservative, or being pro-Trump or anti-Trump. We're all the same person. We're all the same people. Like, seeing what I saw this past week was something that, you know, it takes an event like this for you to see it, unfortunately. And, you know, it's just, it's sickening. It's something that we all need to learn from, for sure. And yeah, guys, I just want to wish my prayers and tell everybody God bless. And I'm thankful for everyone that has helped out, who fundraised, who gave me money to go and support these people. I'm telling you, it's all going to the right place. I promise you that. I know a couple of the families myself. I met them on the ground there, and I'm going to make sure the money goes to them, and I make sure that they get what they need. All right, guys. So thank you for listening to the Vietes Rundown today. Again, you guys can follow me on Twitter at Manny_Vietes for all your latest NBA news. You could also follow Leo, who was on my show today, at BS Leo on Twitter, or follow us on Cowbell Kingdom for all season long for all the Sacramento Kings games. We're going to be giving you guys post-game interviews, high-definition post-game interviews, giveaways, jersey giveaways, all that type of good stuff. So make sure you guys go follow us on all the social media platforms. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. God bless. Peace out.